Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge.
Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we welcome Dr. Navaz Habib. Dr. Habib is a trained chiropractor and the founder of Health Upgraded, an online functional medicine and health optimization clinic. They work with high-performing professionals, athletes, and entrepreneurs to dig a little deeper and find the answers to what's holding them back with their health. So basically finding the root cause of issues that people are dealing with. Dr. Habib is also a writer, and his book, Activate Your Vagus Nerve, is a guide to help you identify and understand the major missing piece in patients that are dealing with some chronic health concerns, such as maybe anxiety, depression, and the list goes on. On this podcast, specifically focused on the vagus nerve and just all the information that he learned while writing his book, we just picked his brain and we absolutely loved this episode. It is filled with information and we know you're going to learn something from this. So we hope you enjoy. Check out Dr. Navaz Habib and let us know what you think. Thanks for listening. Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body, we have Dr. Navaz Habib. Welcome to our podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. I found you on Instagram because I watched a live video of you going live with Dr. Carrie Jones, who, for people that don't know, she's a hormone expert. But I was so intrigued by how you spoke on that video that I messaged you and I said, hey, can you be on our podcast? So first off, tell us a little bit about yourself and yeah, just go from there.
Absolutely. I have an interesting story that got me into functional medicine and kind of where I'm at right now. So I am a chiropractor by profession. I went to Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College here in Toronto, grew up in Toronto, graduated in 2010. I was valedictorian of my class, but I remember standing on stage and giving my speech and being in the worst shape of my life. I was 250 pounds, high blood pressure, borderline diabetic, everything that should not be going on in somebody who's coming out and graduating to teach health to people, I was experiencing and didn't realize I was doing it all to myself, but I truly was. And so it's funny, I was standing there on the stage and I just felt completely out of place. And a couple of years later, I had gotten to a point, I tried weight loss, I tried like cutting calories and tried this diet and tried that diet and nothing really stuck. And then I was introduced to the idea of functional medicine, which is holistic root cause based approaches to understanding what true health is. And my mentor, Dr. Sachin Patel, a really great friend of mine as well, introduced me to this idea. We had a great conversation and he essentially showed me through functional lab testing, through dietary changes, what I needed to do. And so I decided I was going to, in a 6 to 8 months, I got rid of 75 pounds. I eliminated every single one of my health struggles that I was dealing with. I woke up with way more energy and way more clarity in my everyday life. And during this whole time, I was working as a chiropractor, but obviously the changes were so dramatic and so drastic. I definitely was like, I need to share this with the world. So I decided I was going to learn functional medicine and get trained in it and decided to shift entirely 100% into functional medicine. And that's what brought me over here. And then I decided to combine chiro and functional medicine sides of things through understanding how the vagus nerve plays a really important role in our overall health. And so that's what brought me here.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah. So can you go into that a little bit more? Because it's all, I mean, obviously it's like, it'd be a lot to go into, but I wanted to ask you about, just tell us a little bit about the vagus nerve. What's its role? How did you start to become interested in it? And then like, how does it affect our daily life? And how does our daily life affect it?
Yeah, great question. So with regards to the vagus nerve, my interest really began in chiropractic college. We were learning about the cranial nerves, and the cranial nerves are essentially 12 pairs of nerves that start in the brainstem and extend primarily to the head cavity. In fact, every single one of those nerves sends branches to the head cavity, but only one of those nerves leaves from the neck and goes elsewhere. It goes to other places. And that was the vagus nerve. It was the 10th cranial nerve. And that was really interesting to me. It was the only one that left that area. And in fact, not only did it just leave there, but it connects to essentially every single organ within our body. It connects to the heart, the lungs, the stomach, gallbladder, liver, kidneys, spleen, small intestine, large intestine, you name it. Every organ that we have has a connection to the vagus nerve. And so obviously that was a huge piece of interesting news to me. And that really sparked my initial interest in it. So as I continued through chiropractic college, went through, learned all these things, we were always taught that the parasympathetic nervous system, which is that rest and digest and recovery system, is mediated through the vagus nerve. Essentially, the signals that come through the vagus nerve help us get into that rest and digest state. And that was really cool. But when I came into the functional medicine space, I started to see a link between some of the different organs and some of the challenges that occur in different places. We know that the vast majority of chronic health conditions begin in the gut. We know that the microbiome plays a major role in this. And the level of inflammation and the challenges that come from there extend into all of these other organs. And the liver can be compromised very significantly, and detoxification and biotransformation need to occur really effectively. We know that our ability to detoxify through the kidneys and the immune system function via the spleen are so important. And every one of those organs was linked for me to the vagus nerve. And so I started to learn different ways to make sure that this nerve was functioning really well. And that led me into doing a lot more research. I started putting up some blog posts, and it was really quite an interesting kind of universe telling me it was time to do this type of moment when I got an email from a publisher stating that they really loved one of the blog posts that I had written multiple years ago. They liked the writing style, and they said, "We think the vagus nerve is going to be big. Would you like to write a book on this?"
It's going to be big.
So of course, this was a big kind of, A, is this a real email? And B, what an opportunity. So let's do this. And I jumped in both feet and I wrote the book. And in doing so, I learned a ton. Could not believe that there's so much information in regards to how we can use this nerve in a very positive way and how it truly affects our lives. So I've mentioned the parasympathetic nervous system. That is primarily mediated through the vagus nerve. That is the main function of the vagus nerve, according to what we've been taught. But that actually only is 15% of the function on the nerve. 15% of the information that comes through the vagus nerve is parasympathetic. You go and ask any conventional doctor or any even functional medicine doctor that doesn't truly understand the vagus nerve, and they will say vagus nerve equals parasympathetic. But 80% of the information on vagus nerve is actually coming from all of those organs to the brain. It is the gut-brain axis. It is the liver-brain axis. It sends all of the information, all of the status updates of what's going on in every organ goes through the vagus nerve and gets up to the brain and tells us what's going on so that we can then compute that information. That's 80% of the information on the vagus nerve. That's huge. We have 100 trillion bacterial cells that talk to our brain through the vagus nerve every day. If that nerve is not functioning well, then we're not going to get those signals up really effectively. What else is really important to note is there's a few little branches of the vagus nerve that continue to stay in that head area. They go to the muscles at the back of the throat, and they go to the muscles around the laryngeal vocal cord area. And then they also send one branch to the ears, to the skin of the ears, where we actually have sensory information. And those come in really handy when we talk about therapy and using those tools to actually create activation within the vagus nerve and neuroplasticity when we get into that. So for me, that was a huge, huge deal. The other thing that was really interesting about it was the importance of vagus nerve parasympathetic function, specifically on controlling inflammation. The neurotransmitter that the vagus nerve uses is called acetylcholine, ACH. And acetylcholine mediates the cholinergic anti-inflammatory system. So an entire system based primarily through the vagus nerve that puts the brakes on chronic inflammation. So acute inflammation is necessary in any injury, in any acute circumstance. Inflammation is a good thing. But if we don't control that inflammation and we don't put the brakes on that, then there the inflammation continues pushing on the accelerator and becomes chronic and it goes everywhere. And that's really problematic. What we need to do is eliminate or control that inflammation. And that's what the vagus nerve does through the parasympathetic inflammatory kind of system or anti-inflammatory system. So that's a really, really interesting piece of the puzzle. Obviously, being a chiropractor, being in that realm, inflammation was always a huge piece of the puzzle for me. So that was part of the big time learning that I did when I was researching for the book.
That is so interesting.
Amazing. Yeah.
I mean, and it's crazy how much like, I mean, we're like just now realizing that like, oh, hey, what you eat and like your gut is super important. But like, so with the enteric nervous system, is that I've learned that we have like, literally it's like its own little nervous system within our gut, but that's obviously in addition to what the vagus nerve has with other organs, like the liver and the kidneys and
yeah, all that. That's absolutely right. So the enteric nervous system contains more nerve endings in our gut than our primary brain, like our central nervous system brain, which is amazing to note. But the way that the enteric nervous system connects to the central nervous system, to the brain, is through the vagus nerve. So gotcha. Essentially, we've got these two brains that are trying to talk to one another, and the vagus nerve is that connection point between the two.
Wow. So it's almost like a two-way highway where, you know, if you're putting or treating yourself in a certain way, it's going to kind of relay that back up to your brain. I mean, so can you give us an example of like how someone would present? I mean, there's probably 1,000 ways that someone would present if they have some sort of dysfunction, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most common ones that I see have something to do with slow digestion. And that's, they're generally presenting at that time. It can be either slow or really poor and fast digestion as well. But when the gut is affected in a negative way, it can be because of bacteria, parasites, viruses, yeast, worms, heavy metals, mycotoxins. There's so many different things that can affect the gut in a negative way and create this inflammatory reaction. When the vagus nerve isn't strong enough to control that inflammation, we then are diagnosed with IBS, celiac, Crohn's, colitis, some sort of digestive dysfunction. That's the most common thing that I see. Besides that is going to be some sort of autoimmune condition, Hashimoto's, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, things like that. Very, very common. And there's a direct link between gut function and the immune system function. When the inflammation level is not controlled, we know the leaky gut is the primary mediator of that immune system overreaction. And the enteric nervous system is trying to control these things, but the vagus nerve sends those signals to control it. And if it's not strong, immune system goes out and impacts those other organs in a very negative way. And that's where autoimmune conditions primarily come from.
Interesting.
So the most common thing that I'll see is chronic inflammation due to some sort of digestive or autoimmune condition.
So it's almost like you have to have this like perfect storm of like, you know, potentially like a genetic predisposition and then also something to make your gut leaky and then also some sort of stressor to like prevent your vagus nerve from kind of doing its job. Is that, I mean, that's obviously kind of a dumbed down way of saying it, but is that accurate?
To some extent, absolutely. Okay. What I would actually kind of shift there is about 30% is genetics, but 70% is environmental. Mm. The influence is primarily from our lifestyle, our choices, and what's around us and inside us. We've got two environments. We've got our external environment, but we've also got that internal environment. And like I mentioned, we've got 100 trillion bacterial cells in just our large intestine alone. We only have 50 trillion human cells within our body. So that balance is so important to keep in a symbiotic relationship, to make sure that we have the good guys present, to make sure that we don't have too little good guys. That's actually often worse than having a lot of bad guys present, yeah, is not having enough of the good stuff present. And that imbalance will then lead to a lot of these challenges internally, and they tend to be the cause of that perfect storm, because oftentimes even genetic predisposition doesn't or state specifically that you're going to have an autoimmune condition, but we tend to be in this hyper stressed state where our vagus nerves are turned off way more easily. We tend to be in that fight or flight state, especially living in an urban lifestyle, living in a go, go, go environment where we're sitting on our asses on Zoom all day. That's essentially what drives us to be in that stressed state and not in that parasympathetic vagus activated state.
So a lot of people with like autoimmune, they get very frustrated in the conventional medicine world, and then they go and find like a Chinese medicine practitioner, whether it's acupuncture or yoga or whatever they find, or functional medicine, right? And they use herbs, and then sometimes conventional medicine, they will butt heads on different things, right? So there's functional medicine approach and then conventional, and these people are just trying to figure it out. And I feel like one common thing that all these practitioners do, and I use it myself with my clients, is using the breath. So can you talk a little bit about why the breath is like links to the vagus nerve and what it can do in a positive way for people?
One of my colleagues had this quote, and I actually put it into the book, obviously attributed it to him.
Sure.
But he stated that the breath is the only window that we truly have to control the autonomic nervous system. So the autonomic nervous system, I've kind of already alluded to it. It's the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic is the rest and digest side of that. That's what's mediated through the vagus nerve. The sympathetic side of this is the fight or flight system. It's that hyper-stressed state. It's necessary to have it to be able to function. We've evolutionarily had it so that we could survive. Really, that's our survival system, right? We shut off all of our thriving systems in order to survive when we're in that sympathetic state. And when we have the opportunity to be in that thriving state and go into that parasympathetic state, that's a great tool. But the way that we can shift between those two is through the breath. So that's where breath really comes in. When we're in a stressed state, you'll often find that your breath is very shallow and very chest focused. Mm-hmm. You tend to also be breathing through your mouth. When we are in a calm, relaxed, parasympathetic state, we can essentially shift our breath into that diaphragmatic, deep, slow breath that's primarily mediated or primarily done through the nose. That is just in the most simple form how you can shift your state very easily between those. We can then dig into breath work and yoga and Pilates and teaching you how to breathe and build up diaphragmatic strength and neuroplasticity for those things. But that's a whole nother topic that goes deep, deep into the breath.
I have kind of what might be a stupid question. I've wondered this that ever since we took like my anatomy class, you know, we touched on the cranial nerves. I'm in neuro right now and we haven't talked about the cranial nerves yet, but I'm so excited for like the details. But so when it comes to the parasympathetic nervous system and like all these individual organ connections with the vagus nerve, like if you're in a parasympathetic state, is it kind of just like, okay, so you liver needs to do some work, so you're going to do some work, but the stomach is good, so you don't need to, like, do they turn on, like what controls, like what is, do you get what I'm saying? Like what is stimulated and what is like not, because it doesn't necessarily need to, and that's just more energy expenditure.
Yeah, it's a great question. Actually, it's not. I would not classify that as a stupid question.
Okay, good.
The key thing for remembering how these systems will all kind of work together, the liver generally is on all the time. There's no question about it. It's always doing something. It's got 500 some odd functions. The main two are it mediates hormones. It is the conductor of the orchestra being all of the hormones. So that's one of its many roles. Another gigantic role, obviously, is detoxification. So it's constantly filtering out blood that comes from the gut first through the portal system to the liver to be filtered out. And we want to detoxify, make sure that a lot of those toxins that are coming in from the gut don't then end up in different areas and different cells. So that's where I would say the liver is generally always on. You're going to turn on other organs based on what's going on around you. If you're smelling food, you're going to stimulate this whole process to start salivating. When you start salivating, you've already at that point, when you think about food or when you smell food, you're then turning on the entire digestive system. And that's where the stomach is going to start producing stomach acid. But those signals are sent through the vagus nerve. you smell this, you get this sensory information in, your brain processes that information, but it has to send that signal down to those organs to start doing its job. When it comes to the digestive tract, it's when the food is either already in or coming in. And then the taste buds are a huge piece of turning on the rest of that digestive system, because then you know exactly, this is a sweet bite, this is a fatty bite. You get that flavor profile that tells you what pancreatic enzymes to start producing and to start pushing with regards to the migrating motor complex and moving peristaltic motion down through all of those organs. With regards to other organs like the kidneys are constantly filtering the blood and eliminating the ammonia system and kind of getting rid of the toxins through the water. And we also have spleen function that's pretty much constant as well, filtering out the blood, making sure the blood cells are functioning at a high level. Those are generally going to be quite often just turned on all the time. But when we have high levels of infection or high levels of bacteria or toxins building up, that indicates immune reactivity. And so the spleen will turn on a little bit more as well. It's very much that it's the connection point between the brain where the sensory information comes in. The vagus nerve is going to send information directly to which organs that need to turn on, depending on where, like what's going on environmentally, externally, and internally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if your allostatic load is just like insane, then it only makes sense that we'd be diseased and miserable.
Absolutely. And when allostatic load is high, actually down-regulating vagus nerve and you're up-regulating the sympathetic nervous system, which turns off the control of inflammation. And when that allostatic load continues to grow and passes a threshold, the vagus nerve doesn't shut off, but it just gets overwhelmed. And that's a really important factor because a lot of people are in that vagus overwhelmed state.
Yeah. So what are some actionable, I mean, obviously people should buy your book, but what are some actionable steps we can all do? I mean, I have a guess as to a couple of them, but you know, people always make excuses.
Yeah, so. Of course. And with my book, essentially came up with the least excuse possible type of exercises. I wanted it to be super accessible, super cheap. Like literally the vast majority of these are completely free and you can do them in this moment. And the first one we've already talked about, it's breath. It's spending time in that parasympathetic diaphragmatic breathing area. The breath turns on the parasympathetic nervous system. As most people note, that parasympathetic nervous system is called the rest and digest system. I've added one more word to that, and that is recovery. We cannot recover when we're in that sympathetic nervous system. Recovery only happens in that parasympathetic state. When the vagus nerve is activated, when our breath is slow and calm and diaphragmatic, we're actually stimulating function within those organs below. A lot of people don't realize this, but when the diaphragm is actually contracting and creating the vacuum effect within our lungs, we're drawing that air in. But the diaphragm doesn't just bring air in to the lungs above it. It's actually massaging the organs below as well. It's creating movement in the stomach, the small intestine, large intestine, pancreas, spleen. That motion through diaphragmatic breath is actually stimulating movement inside those organs. And that is sending a signal through the vagus nerve that we are in this calm state up to the brain. The breath truly is the key to doing all of this. And then I stacked on a bunch of other exercises to breath. But it all comes down to breathing really, really well. We don't know how to breathe as a general population. We've forgotten how, and the breath is the key to this. And this is funny because you mentioned this earlier, Lena, that the conventional doctors and the traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic and whatever practitioners, the breath is that common kind of centered area. We tend to overlook it a little bit, I think, in conventional medicine, but that is so, so important. And it all really does come down to breath. The other things that we can use are those other connections that I mentioned that go to the muscles in and around the neck and the larynx and the pharynx. And we can also then use the skin of the ear. So with the skin of the ear, it's a sensory information area. It's a very specific area of the skin of the ear that is the auricular branch of the vagus nerve. And that can be stimulated through acupressure by yourself, literally touching on the specific areas, I've got a map in the book as to where that area is. Quite simple. It's essentially the inside part of the ear, not the outside of the auricle, the inside of the auricle. And so that area can be stimulated. You can use a cotton ball. You can use pressure with your finger. That's a great way to stimulate it. Acupuncture is probably the most effective when it comes to using the ear. So auricular acupuncture, finding a practitioner that knows what they're doing with regards to that is going to be really obviously the most important thing here.
Yeah.
So using that tool is great. And that one obviously does cost a little bit of money, but there are a bunch we can do that are free. And that includes breathing. That includes humming, chanting, gargling, and gag reflex. Anything that stimulates the laryngeal muscles, the muscles around the vocal cords. So the reason, this is really interesting, the reason why in meditation, in traditional Indian cultures and traditional Hindu cultures, the om sound, that is actually a reverberation of the laryngeal muscles at a specific frequency that we know calms the breath. And so when we go om and we hold that vibration, we're stimulating the vagus nerve to turn on those laryngeal muscles and control the pressure on the vocal cords. And the longer we do that, we're doing a very, very long, deep exhale. We're training the breath at the same time while stimulating the muscles that are innervated through the vagus nerve. Humming is a wonderful, wonderful tool, and you can stack that onto obviously breath. Gargling is awesome. Gargling, my dad used to do it for years and years and years, and he continues to, and he's super healthy still. I used to laugh at him, and then I did the research, and obviously now I'm eating my words and laugh
as,
at him.
As we do with fathers.
So with gargling, what you can do essentially is keep a glass by your sink every morning, every evening when you brush your teeth, throw some warm water in there, throw a little bit of salt in there because it helps break up some of the plaque and the mucus that builds up at the back of the throat, which has obviously then an antibacterial effect because we can get rid of some of the stuff back there. And what you're going to do is take a sip and just gargle for 10 seconds as hard as you possibly can without obviously aspirating that water. Start with 10 seconds, build up to a point where you can actually take 4 breaths through your nose while then exhaling in the gargle for up to a minute. It's really quite hard to do to build up to that, but start with that 10 second number. I think it's very doable. And you know it's working quite well when you actually start to tear from your eyes while you're gargling. You have to do it quite hard, quite a vigorous gargle. It's not just a, no big deal. You got to go really, really hard. And when you start to do that really effectively, you turn on the nuclei in your brainstem that control lacrimation, that control tearing in the eyes. When that happens, it's a sign that the brainstem is turned on and more cranial nerves are activated. I think you're going to really appreciate that when you get to the cranial nerve section of your course.
Yeah. And I have a neuro exam on Friday and we're like learning about like the tracts right now. And I literally just want to like bash my head into a wall. It's pretty bad. I mean, it's so cool. It's so insane. Like, first of all, like how the hell we know, like, this is what things do. Like, I mean, wasn't everybody dead and we were looking at their body? I don't know, whatever. But yeah. And then I like look for like different sources. This is a tangent, but I just have to say it because it's crazy. So looking for like different sources online and like everybody either names things differently or they're like named after some random doctor, important doctor, obviously, but it's really so insane, but I'm having so much more of a greater appreciation for it, even just speaking with you, because I'm like, this is applicable.
Yes.
Yes. Obviously.
It's fascinating. I remember
those tracts. I remember those days. It was good times.
Good times.
This stuff is so fascinating. And I think when I was watching your live video with Carrie, I think what intrigued me the most is when you were talking about like the oscillation of the breathing with the diaphragm, because I'm studying postural restoration, and I don't know if you've heard of it, but we really talk a lot about the diaphragm. I mean, it goes really deep into all this very deep information, but a lot of what we talk about is the asymmetry and then the oscillation and why that is so important, because when you move, you need to oscillate, and you need to, like, what you're saying about the humming, reverberating and vibrating and all these different things. And it just going so hand in hand with what I was learning at the time. I'm still studying it, but it's fascinating that, so I didn't know that about the ear. I knew a little bit about the diaphragm and you've just really expanded on it. So what are other places that you can stimulate the vagus nerve? Ear, diaphragm, any other specific
The vocal cords are the other one that I would go to. And then there are kind of the little bit of fringe things that you can do as well. Things like using essential oils to help activate and detoxify right behind the mastoid process. So right behind the lobe of the ear, you'll find kind of a bony process. Mm-hmm. If you just fall back from that, there's a soft area right there. That's as close as we can possibly physically get to the vagus nerve without kind of creating negative reactions. So that would be something to do. There's certain blends out there, things like clove and lime oil or lavender, that can help to just kind of activate that type of system and detoxify the nerve itself if there are toxins that enter it. These are a little bit more fringe. They're a little bit more on the quote unquote woo-woo side, but there are a lot of people out there that have had very positive results doing things like that.
I find it interesting too that, you know, let's say you have somebody who's in a more sympathetic state, right? They're having a panic attack, whatever. Let's just make it real sympathetic in the middle of New York City. Okay. You tell them to just take a deep breath and like that will help the situation. That's something you learn as a child who's having a temper tantrum. So when you're talking about neurology, it's super quick.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe you can talk a little bit about that too.
Yeah. The way to, in a moment like that, and I see this happen often when people are talking about their health challenges and the struggles that they've dealt with when they're on a call with me. The fastest, most effective way to do this is to put one hand on your chest and one hand on your belly. Close your eyes and take a breath and just notice which hand is moving. Is it the hand that's on your chest? Is that hand kind of elevating and going outwards, forwards? Or is it the hand on the belly? In an ideal situation, you should be moving your hand on your belly. That means that your breath is more diaphragmatic and that'll help push you into that parasympathetic state. So I have people take 3 deep breaths, notice where the first breath is. If it's in the chest, then the second breath, you're going to consciously expand on the belly. And the third breath is just to make sure that you're there. And immediately within those 3 breaths, we're talking 15, 20 seconds, their state shifts completely. And it's crazy to see them go from this speaking so fast in this high-pitched tone and just can't control. And all of a sudden, they come into this calm, relaxed state. And I asked them, how do you feel? And like, I feel phenomenal. And I was like, yeah, that was 20 seconds of breathing that shifted everything for you. But it's using that feedback mechanism of having your hand on and just creating that consciousness, creating that proprioceptive reaction of, I know which hand should be moving. It shifts everything for people.
Yeah. I used to do that with like high school athletes that I was training. I'd be like, all right, first thing we're doing is lying on the floor, feeling where your breath is. And it's funny, 'cause like, if I try to do the paradoxical breathing, it feels strange, but I do know, I mean, I know I breathe shallow, like when I'm studying, which is like all the time, or, you know, just stressed out. So it's just, it's so actionable. And like, I think so many people could benefit from just like, find your breath, just the process of trying to do that and paying attention to it is just like, honestly, that can make such a difference.
Absolutely.
It really can. You're so knowledgeable, and people, we're going to put your book in our show notes. And how can people find you? Oh, actually, before how people can find you, we'll get there. But we do ask every guest one question. And the question is, what do you do every day, but it doesn't really have to be every day, to move your brain or move your body or both?
For me, it's cycling. I love getting on my bike. I've only really done it for the last year pretty consistently. I bought a Peloton right before the world went to craziness, which worked out beautifully from a timing perspective. That really helped. And I bought a road bike and I started training. And so probably 4 or 5 days a week, I'm on one of the two. And to the point where last year I rode from Toronto to Niagara Falls. So that was 140 kilometers, about 5 miles. And for somebody who's rarely been on a bike before that, that was a big deal for me. But on a daily basis, what do I do to move my brain and my body? I stand at my desk. I essentially, when I'm on calls, I've decided that I use my standing desk to do that. And I move my body as much as I possibly can with some sort of breath work and some sort of activity. Doesn't happen every day, but most.
And I'm sure you move your brain all the time just dealing with patients.
Yeah. Where can people find you to work with you? Because you're brilliant. You're a chiropractor. I'm sure you're doing some virtual stuff. I don't know if you're in person still, but give us a little bit of info on how people can work with you.
I've shifted my practice completely online. Business is called Health Upgraded. The timing couldn't have been better to shift everything online. It happened even before the world went to craziness, which obviously timing was phenomenal. I decided I wanted to be a little bit more free. The online world worked. So let's do that. So I've been on Zoom for 2 years with people, and you can check us out, healthupgraded.com. Follow me on Instagram, Dr. Navaz Habib, YouTube channel, a few other things.
You have a podcast too, right?
And I do have a podcast. Yes. The Health Upgrade podcast.
Cool. I love that name, Health Upgrade. That is so cool.
And need us.
We all need a little bit of a health upgrade. So cool. Keep doing what you're doing. We are so honored to have had you on our podcast. You're brilliant. And thank you for sharing your knowledge.
It's my absolute honor and pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.